This is a podcast about stuff that is gay. If you came here for the gay stuff, then you came to the right place. For the boys and the men, for the theys and the thems, for the gays and the girls, and the women in STEM.
TV, movies, and books.
Speak
our
out.
Agenda's got the goods.
Speak
all
out.
The things you wanna know.
Speak
tune
out.
In to Speak Out Radio.
Kia ora koutou, welcome to Speak Out Radio. If you're listening to us on the radio, you are listening to Access Radio on 106.1 FM. If you're listening on your podcasting app of choice, then you are not listening to us on 106.1 FM. You're listening to us on your phone, maybe. So, everyone, audience, welcome to the first Speak Out episode in a while. We haven't been able to do one for a little bit, but we're really excited to bring it back starting January 2024. And yeah, welcome to the launch of Speak Out with this fun episode. This episode is queerness and neurodiversity. And I am very excited to have some wonderful people chatting with me. So we'll do introductions now. So kia ora koutou, my name is Tobias. I use he, him, ia pronouns. If you've listened before, you've probably heard my voice all over the place. And yeah, I'm a staff member inside out, was a volunteer for 5 years and loving, always love Speak Out. Talia, can I hand over to you to introduce yourself?
Yep. I'm Talia. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a teacher. I quite enjoy it. Yeah, trans, gay, and autistic, so yeah, and also love reading academic things about this, so always fun, but yes.
Kia ora, Talia, and Elena.
Kia ora, I'm Elena. I'm a student down at Canterbury studying mechanical engineering with an acoustic biomedical focus, possibly minor, I don't know yet what the paperwork will say. I'm a neurodiverse, very queer person, and yeah, my pronouns are they, them.
Well, kia ora korua. Lovely to get to sit down and have a chat with you about something that I feel a lot of passion for. Maybe we can just start with sort of outlining sort of our experiences with neurodiversity. You can go in depth or not in depth as you want. Does anyone feel particularly inclined to start us off?
I'm always happy to start. For me, obviously a big thing that often shows up with autism is the social skills. Now, one of the wonderful things in my one of the beautifully good things. So when I was a kid at school, I would incessantly ask questions. I'd be like, oh, but how does this work? But how does this work? Sometimes to the annoyance of my peers, and actually the teachers sometimes. But the one thing I've realized in hindsight that was quite nice, because I didn't pick up on subtle social cues, I never realized the teachers didn't want me to ask the questions. So I just kept asking. Whereas, like, now as a teacher, I see students being like, oh, no, I shouldn't ask questions because people don't like it. And I'm like, no, ask. Please ask. So, yeah, like, I sort of had that sort of thing. And I was sort of quite oblivious until I got into more sort of into the high school area where people were sort of treating me in ways. And I was like, I don't get it. I'm just saying what I'm saying. And they seem to think that what I'm saying isn't the right way to say it, or it doesn't actually mean what I'm saying, and sort of got confused, and I was like, this is weird. And then I did an engineering degree, and statistics indicate that if you're an engineer, you're far more likely to be autistic.
I did not know that.
Yeah, have a lecturer who makes all of his students for one course take some kind of quiz thing online to see who's most autistic.
The competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, in that environment, I had fewer issues. And so it sort of went away, and then went to teacher training college. And teaching is a very social job. And I mean, one of the reasons I did it was to challenge myself, because, and I know this is not the case for everyone, the way my brain works, the technical problems made lots of sense. They were fairly straightforward. Whereas people were a little bit harder. So becoming a teacher, I mean, there were various other reasons, but it was also a nice challenge for me. And that was when I started to sort of be like, okay, there's significant differences between how I think and how I talk than a lot of other people. Fortunately, I've like taught in schools with a lot of neurodiverse people, which has helped. I mean, one school had a teacher who I worked with, who she actually taught me when I was a student, and she was immensely helpful for sort of translating some of the neurotypical things. And now I've sort of come full circle, where I've gotten to the point where I'm like, actually, you know what? The way I think might be different, but there's a whole bunch of other people who think that way as well. And so if we just pretend that that way isn't okay, we've kind of missed the point. So yeah, that's sort of an overview.
Kia ora. Lena, do you want to share a little bit?
Sure. Definitely in high school started to realize that, well, I'd always known that my brain worked differently, and it was often just put down to, you've got allergies, you've got to be more mature, and you've got to be... have a high self-preservation motive. I don't know what word I'm looking for there. And then figuring out that on the autism spectrum, and especially when I was in my first relationship, that became very clear, coming from a neurospicy household where we were all just a bit different, but it wasn't noticeable because it was normal with us. And just very much started embracing that at uni and figuring out ways that I could support myself and get people to support me, and now just kind of thriving and being happy, even though there's still challenges, they're easier to like manage.
Kia ora, thank you. So I'm coming to this from a slightly different lens. I have schizophrenia, which I think I did an episode about psychosis a few years ago when I was a volunteer before I was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I haven't listened to that one in a while, but it would be really interesting to go listen back and sort of see what's changed. I think at that time I thought that I had schizoaffective before I was diagnosed, so that would be a fun little peek into my previous psyche. So I started showing symptoms of schizophrenia when I was 14, primarily delusions and other paranoia, and have been through a few different mental health services and then been on quite a lot of different meds over the years. However, now my medication is pretty stable. I take a once a month, every 4 weeks, I get an injection of paliperidone, which actually, fun little thing, made me a lot less scared of needles for when I've just gone on tea recently, because now I've gotten monthly injections every month for like the last 3 years. So now testosterone is like a teeny tiny needle and it's fine. So that's a fun little intersection of queerness and neurodivergence there. I've also been questioning recently whether I have autism. My partner, very funnily, has peer-reviewed me and assigned me autistic, because it thinks that there's no way that I could be its partner if I wasn't autistic, because it primarily communicates with other autistic people in autistic-to-autistic communication and thinks that I am doing that. However, in the past, I've sort of, like, been, like, when I've been questioning whether I have autism, I've just been like, oh, but, like, I can't be autistic because I've, like, perfectly memorized how small talk functions, and I'm so good at small talk because I know exactly how it works and exactly what everyone's going to say at all times, which is totally an illicit thing to think, right?
I mean, if I may, something I have remarked to both students and colleagues, if you're planning out your conversations before they happen, yeah, apparently that's not neurotypical.
Scripting!
News to me, for real. And also, schizophrenia is a developmental, neurodevelopmental disorder in the same way that autism is, so, and they have a lot of overlap, so I've always been, like, a bit iffy on the overlap there, especially because once you get diagnosed with, I've heard people who've been diagnosed with autism, and then once they get a schizophrenia diagnosis, the autism diagnosis is revoked away from them, because supposedly some people think you can't have both at the same time. So that's fun. Okay, next item on our agenda, because we are not neurotypical, we have to have an agenda for the podcast. So, Talia, would you like to tell us a little bit about the cool thing that you have been involved in?
Yeah. So, given sort of some of my experiences of being autistic in teaching, and knowing other neurodiverse people, I sort of started getting to a point where I was like, there need to be people who support this and understand this and all of that kind of thing. And so last year, I finally got around to joining the union. I came from a family which was sort of like, oh no, the union just sort of takes your money and they're only useful if you do something wrong, but if you know the rules, it's fine. And then I finally was like, okay, no, I need some other people around. And, joined the union, and then I found out about how things work and all of that. And so within about 2 months of joining the union, I had written an entire paper being like, okay, we actually need a network for neurodiverse teachers. And so I put together a Facebook group as well. So it's still running where, me being me, I started asking a question every week, and now I will do it religiously because that is now my routine. And it's so far it's been really good. Like, sort of obviously in a lot of social media spaces at the moment, a lot of the discussions are quite polarizing and sometimes aggressive. On this page, it's sort of like, oh no, I do me and you do you, and we can appreciate that different people do different things without being grumpy.
That is a rare space you have made.
Yeah,
that does not happen in many places.
Well, I mean, one of the first rules that I put on there was assume that if someone is talking to you, they are making a genuine attempt at communication, regardless of how it comes across. And I think that's sort of a really, really big thing. So I put together the paper, went through all the various stages, and then in the school holidays in September, October last year, went to annual conference and went through unanimously. There were teachers there who were just so thankful that this had been done, because whether we like it or not, neurodiversity is still seen as the other. And especially in a profession like teaching, where we do have a tendency to go with the traditional options a lot of the time. Fortunately, I've taught in schools that have sort of veered away from that. But yeah, there were so many of these teachers. Some of them were like, yep, I'm neurodiverse, and yeah, there's so many things that would be useful. But there were even some teachers who were like, oh yeah, my kid's neurodiverse, and knowing that they'd be able to grow up and become a teacher and be supported is amazing. So yeah, the real work will sort of start this year as the network sort of comes together and sort of goes forward. But yeah, the hope is that we sort of start doing that, which, like, at the moment, we're expected to support our neurodiverse students, which obviously happens to varying degrees depending on the school, but there is an expectation that we support them. There isn't that expectation for teachers, but this network will do it. But the thing is, if you have a bunch of neurodiverse teachers who know how education works, but are also neurodiverse, we can sort of start being like, oh, hey, this will work better for these kids. Like one of my colleagues, a fellow teacher who she sort of helped out with the paper, and she was the seconder for putting it forward. She's dyslexic, and being able to, and an English teacher, and being able to say to students, yeah, I'm an English teacher, but apologies for my spelling, and sort of being able to show them that that's okay, and that there are ways around it, is so, so valuable. So, yeah, not only will it help the teachers, but I do think that it'll help the students quite a lot, and I mean, this is in addition to, like, the union also has a rainbow network, so, like, having that, and I have noticed there's quite a bit of overlap between the teachers in the neurodiverse group and the teachers in the rainbow group, but yeah, it's quite nice knowing that, yeah, the union can cater for all manner of diversities,
Think, like you were saying, I mean, in sort of every sort of realm, representation can be really powerful, especially for young people. So I think, like, if I had, like, an openly neurodiverse teacher at high school or primary school, like, I just would have, it would have been amazing, you know? You would have been able to, like, see someone else who, like, an adult who was successful and talking to people and, like, changing people's lives while being neurodiverse, or, you know?
Yeah.
So that power of representation is so important.
Yeah, and I mean, I've had some students who, like, they've actually come and said to me, like, thank you, because when they have social difficulties at school, I don't go, oh, but you should know how to do it, or, oh, here's the list of phrases that you should use. Because I've gone through that, I can then sit down with them and go, okay, I get what's going on. This is what they're thinking. This is what we're thinking. Now we need to sort of figure out where to find that balance. And so, yeah. And I'll actually be completely honest. The conversations I have with the autistic students are not dissimilar in nature to the ones I have with trans students, where the trans ones are like, oh, but the teachers don't get it because this sits. And it's like, yep, they don't, but let's figure this out so that we can get outcomes that work for sort of everyone. So, yeah, no, it's quite good.
It's the classic all oppression is linked kind of thing.
Yeah.
And comes from, like, similar values and ideas.
Yeah, yeah. And, oh, definitely. I mean, there's various, like, Māori pedagogies that when you look at it, it's like, oh, no, this actually helps everyone.
Yeah. it's like the the idea that, like, decolonization helps everyone, not just, like, Indigenous people. It's a very similar thing of, like, you know, making things less ableist actually helps neurotypical and able-bodied people as well.
Yeah.
And it's similar for, like, you know, what helps trans people is good for cis people as well.
I mean, going slightly off topic, and I'll keep this note short, but, yeah, when I was doing sort of research into sort of autism in different cultures, it was quite interesting. A lot of Pacific cultures, there wasn't much mention of it, but I came across one thing that was talking about how the Pacific Wayfinders, there's actually significant similarities between them and sort of what would be defined as autistic, like the amount of information that they store in their brain, the fact that they're able to concentrate on something for extreme periods of time, all of those kinds of things. And it was quite interesting seeing that. And so I sometimes wonder if it's sort of Western society has a name for it because they want it to be like, you're different. Whereas now we're sort of holding on to that name and going, well, actually, it's a name to point out that, yeah, I might do things differently, but here are my strengths, here are my weaknesses, and we can work with that. So, no, it's always interesting.
it's like the term takata apoi, which it's not a traditional term, because in traditional Māori culture, we didn't have a term for it because it was just natural and normal.
Yeah.
Whereas now that it's sort of become othered in that way, there's a need for that sort of label for it.
Yeah.
And also, I also just got a book out from the Vic Uni Library about different cultures' understandings of schizophrenia, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'm really excited to read it because it sounds really cool.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for telling us. That's some really cool work. So I'm so excited to sort of hear where that goes this year and onwards and stuff, because it's going to make a lot of difference for a lot of people. So props to you for setting that up. Elena, you wanted to share a little bit about your university experience.
Yes. So, well, this year is going into the third year of the Neurodivergent Society at University of Canterbury, which I've been a member of since 2022 when it was founded. And it was founded to try and create a safe space to help facilitate social support and community, and also some academic advocacy within the University of Canterbury to students and also staff. And so it's been quite a windy path at times. It's felt like trying to figure out how to do all the club stuff of becoming affiliated with the university's student association and filling in all the forms and having people who can read all the forms and understand what the forms are saying, and getting people to reply, full stop. We haven't been able to run many events within the university, but we have been able to start some kind of projects and initiatives at the university that we're hoping will take foot this year. And my main involvement has been through the mechanical department, and we ran a survey at the end of last year of neurodivergent mechanical students and how they're finding mechanical and what support they could be helped by. And it was really interesting because a lot of the responses were kind of expected but kind of sad in the ways that some people were struggling, and also around recognizing whether a diagnosis would be helpful or not, and helping people to know what supports are available through the university for academic assessments. And we've had some really great conversations, and we're hoping that network or forum kind of thing will be also set up for staff this year, because there's currently no support for university staff who are neurodivergent, and whether they want to disclose that to their employer or not is not something that they should have to decide, to still be surrounded by support and know that there's other neurodivergent people in the university that they can talk to about their challenges. Yeah, so this year we're really hoping to see some of the plans that we've been we've been working on happen, and see if that can make a difference to students at the university, and so that they A, know what support is available for them with academics, and they can also meet more people that are like them and see representation in the university. So yeah,
that's awesome. I know for me, a few years ago I found a Discord community that was all people that experienced psychosis. I think that sort of community element of like coming together and finding other people who are neurodiverse or neurodivergent, or even have the same or similar experiences, is really key. Cause like neurodiversity, at least in my experience, can feel really like, you can feel like you're really alone, like particularly for like, you know, delusions and stuff. Like a lot of the time my brain is like yelling at me that other people are trying to hurt me. So then when I come out of that, it's like, you sort of still, like, I still carry a little bit of, like, the the mistrust and like, or the feeling really like alone and like no one else can help me or knows what's happening to me. So I feel like finding other people who have like psychosis and similar things has just been life changing.
Yeah, our community is bloody useful, and I know one thing I've definitely noticed, possibly less common necessarily with schizophrenia, but yeah, even the Facebook group that I put together there, like I was like, yeah, if you're neurotypical, you can come along, just be polite. And there were a bunch of people who within a week of being on there were like, oh, wait a minute. and yeah, sometimes you're just like, oh no, I'm just weird. And it's like, no, yeah. you're part of a group. It's just, you haven't found your group.
It's like, you know how like, when I don't know if this happened to you guys, but like I at first, before I realized I was queer, I was like, oh yeah, I really support rainbow people. I'm a real big ally, you know, I'm go queer people. And then like a few months later I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's similar with like neurodivergency of like, like you can be like, oh, you know, I just want to be in the space. I like want to hang out with other cool, you know, with cool neurodiverse people. And then you realize like, oh,
oh yeah. The other thing I wanted to add, was that this year we're hoping, well, one of the major findings from our survey was that there is a serious need for a low sensory computer space in mechanical, because we have softwares that we cannot use remotely. We do not have access to on our own computers, A, because they would blow up the memory in our computers, B, because we don't have licenses and they're very expensive. And so people have to go into the computer labs. And while the computer labs are open 24/7, that does not promote good sleep schedule if you are going into the computer lab at 3 a.m. in the morning or at 10 o'clock at night to do your projects, because that's the only time that you can focus on the work you have to do. And you can actually get it done without being in either physical pain or just being completely unable to concentrate because of the environment around you. And so we're really hoping that the report that we're going to submit to the mechanical department is taken seriously and that they find a space and a way to make this happen, because it would make a difference in so many people's lives in mechanical. And if we can make it happen here, then we can show other departments of engineering and also other departments in the university the impact and the need for these low sensory spaces in such a chaotic degree.
That would be a really cool sort of very material change to come out of that society, so that would be awesome.
Yeah. Don't know if it'll happen, but I'm hoping.
Fingers crossed, because that would be great. I hadn't even considered sort of that side of just like having to go into the uni. Like obviously like my experiences of going into the uni have been horribly overwhelming, and like when I've been in the middle of a delusion, but like not even being able to do like necessary coursework.
No, I mean, I've heard of libraries that have, like, an hour a day where it's like, okay, we're going to be quiet. So, yeah, hopefully, like, it's not an unreasonable request, so here's hoping.
Yeah, Vic Uni has certain levels of the library, because there's, like, six or whatever, can be, like, study group and, like, group spaces, but then some of them you have to be quiet. Mm. I don't know how strictly it's enforced, but, yeah, that would be a really cool change to make. Okay. Are we all good to move on to our next point?
Yeah.
Excellent. Now we're going to chat a little bit about the intersection of neurodivergence with the queer rainbow LGBTQIA+ community. Talia, you had some points you wanted to make on this one.
Yeah. So as sort of through the path of doing my Masters of Education, in one of the papers, it was all about inclusive classrooms, so we did learn sort of about diverse learners, all of that kind of thing, and I ended up doing sort of my final assignment looking at how to improve education for neurodiverse trans kids. And I mean, when I was sort of starting to think about it, there was a line that I saw from written by a autistic trans woman, where she literally said, schools are terrible places. And as a teacher, I was like, oh no, how can we fix this? And so I was doing my research and yeah, I found a couple of papers that were like, oh yeah, no, like autistic people are more likely to be trans. Now there's various theories as to why, but I know the sort of the one that definitely resonates with me quite a bit, being a trans autistic person. There's the idea that trans people and a number of autistic people and a number of neurodiverse people, but definitely noticeable in autistic people, is that we very much struggle to not be who we are. And so the running theory is you might have sort of some low-level gender dysphoria, which a neurotypical would go, oh, that's a thing, but the social collective says no, so I'm not gonna, I can deal with that, I can sort of put that away. Whereas the autistic brain is more like, no, that's me, I'm me, I want to be me. And so it's quite interesting sort of seeing that kind of stuff. But also what I found, like most of the recommendations for improving stuff for trans kids was sort of similar to improving stuff for autistic kids, much like we talked about with sort of oppression or coming from sort of the same source. But like one of the really, really big ones that definitely resonated with me, being autistic, the biggest thing you often get pinged on is the social stuff. Being trans, you defy social expectations.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of this compounded thing of, oh, you don't say the right things and you don't look the right things and you're expecting us to say the things that we don't feel we should be saying to you. And so it becomes quite an interesting intersection. Where like just being autistic, yep, if you're doing well enough academically, you can probably get away with it. People just assume you're the quirky nerd. Just being trans, well, yeah, you can't really fly by with that one. but yeah, definitely sort of compounds that. And like, I know I've sort of experienced that where it's been like, oh, well, I'm explaining a thing in a way that makes sense to me about being trans, and then other people will understand it very, very differently, and then they won't get it, and they'll come off poorly, and I'll be like, but it makes sense, right? and so it definitely can complicate the matter, and I've gotten better over time, but I also try to just lean towards the neurodiverse pals. whether I like it or not, occasionally in my brain I'm like, oh, neurotypicals,
yeah.
But yeah, so that intersection, not only is it has sort of a quite significant effect, but it's also more likely, which I find quite interesting. And I mean, if you've had a thing that sort of shakes your world, like finding out you're neurodiverse, then coming out as part of the rainbow community, you're like, oh, well, I've already discovered that I'm different, so it's not gonna hurt
What's one more difference? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've already disappointed my parents. No, that's a joke. Parents shouldn't be disappointed by that. Sorry. Very dark humor.
Disclaimer, it's a joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you saw my face, you'd see the massive grin. But yes,
can confirm.
Yeah.
you have a specific stat here. Do you want to share that number?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, autistic people, I'm pretty sure this is the number. I can't remember whether the trans comes first in the sentence or the autistic. It's been a while, but I'm pretty sure it's autistic people are around 40% more likely to be trans than holistic people, which, yeah, that's the neurotypical to autistic sort of term. So, yeah, people with a regular neurotype. but yeah, so that's quite noticeable.
That is very noticeable. That's a really cool stat. Actually, I really love that stat.
Yeah.
I actually, the way I heard the some estimated reasoning for it was like around like rules of like, gender. What is gender in our society? But a set of rules, and like autistic people are less, inclined to follow rules that don't make sense.
Yeah.
Is sort of what I've heard about that one, which is fun.
Yeah.
I know
with me, it's, I'll follow the rules if either it makes sense or the person who's putting it in place I have respect for, but I'll only have respect for them if I know that they know what they're talking about.
That's fair. Yes. The last thing on our agenda, I want to change. I want to say get rid of that idea, and I want to talk about, very briefly, or as long as it takes, what are our opinions on neurodiverse versus neurodivergent? Because I've heard us say both today. Does anyone have any strong feelings on this?
I mean, I'll let Elena go first, because I feel like I've been saying a lot of things. I do have them, but yes, I'll let Elena go first.
Thoughts on this? I know they're different words and ones. Yeah, no. Pass.
That's okay.
On my end, this actually came up in discussion around the paper for the Neurodiverse Teachers Network. And when I first saw someone sort of be like, oh, it's this, not this, I was like, oh, don't be pedantic, please don't. That's, and because sort of I had experienced resistance, not within the union, but outside of the union to neurodiverse stuff, I was like, they just being annoying. But no, the person then explained it, and they made a fair point, which was, neurodiverse is to describe a diverse set of neurologies, which theoretically can include neurotypical. So if you say we have a neurodiverse community, that includes neurotypicals. And while I've read some marvelous, marvelous articles where they write neurotypicality as a disorder in the same way that they've done with a lot of neurodivergencies, society is designed for neurotypical people. It's designed to cater to them, and so it's more the... And so then the term neurodivergent indicates a divergence from neurotypicality. Mm-hmm. So I can see the relevance. And we also sort of discussed that neurodiverse is more plural, whereas neurodivergent is more singular. But yeah, personally, I can call me either for myself, but like if there is someone who's like, hey, no, we should define it this way, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. It's a bit like in the queer community where it's like some people will use the word queer and others will use rainbow, others will use the specific term that suits them, LGBT, so on and so forth. And so it's sort of up to the individual in question.
Yeah. A friend of a colleague of mine went to the PATHA conference in Melbourne, I think it was recently, and apparently went to this great talk on neurodivergency and came back and was like, okay, I learned that you're supposed to say neurodivergent, that neurodivergence is the one. And I'm like, okay. my understanding of neurodivergent is that it was a term that was sort of coined online, and that it is very inclusive of what falls into neurodivergent. So that includes, like, I think the original coiner said, like, anxiety, depression, OCD, you know, bipolar, schizophrenia, all of it. And then neurodiverse, I don't have that much more knowledge on. So I'm also, you can call me either, I don't mind that much. I just thought it was funny when apparently this, the right one is neurodivergent, according to this panel that my colleague can do. But I don't have strong feelings. I just wanted to ask because I noticed that we were saying both today.
I do find it interesting that they refer to neurodivergent as sort of the broader term, given that if you look at the history of the term, it was originally, neurodivergent was originally the one that was specifically just ADHD and autism.
Mm. Yeah, I think it sort of mutated from what the original person who coined it meant.
Mm.
And it was taken to mean only ADHD and autism, which is something that I find annoying when people say that it is only those two things.
Oh, yeah. For the network, I was very, very clear. I was like, no, it's just if your neurology is not neurotypical.
Yeah.
And one thing that I feel should be mentioned as well, self-diagnosis is valid.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, don't get me wrong, you're not going to walk into the doctors and say, hey, give me this meds for this thing because I've decided it's there. That's messier because medication and all of that. But like being like, yeah, no, I'm this is me. That's perfectly valid. And I mean, like I've never been diagnosed partially because of the cost and because some countries don't like you being diagnosed with that and then immigrating there.
Including New Zealand.
Yeah. Yep. And so, like, for me, a diagnosis will serve no purpose. Like, I have ADHD colleagues who, for them, a diagnosis served a purpose because they could get the medication that was relevant. But autism doesn't have medication. It doesn't need it. Mm. Like, we can function and there's a series of drawings with sort of little descriptions by an artist on various different neurological things, and one of them is autism, and where all the rest of them, well, a lot of the other ones tend to be sort of monsters that aren't always the most fun. The autism monster, as it were, it's sort of like, oh yeah, it kind of hangs around you and eventually you kind of get comfortable with it and it lets you see things differently. And it's quite nice. And so, yeah, no, it's like being able to identify as who you are, it's reasonable because no one's going to go, like, no neurotypical would go, oh yeah, I'm autistic because I really struggle at social interactions, because all the autistic people in the room will go, ah, ha, 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 no. and I can't imagine anyone would be like, any neurotypical would be like, oh, I'm dyslexic. Like, how does that help you?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone claiming schizophrenia because it would get them something. Like, the most it would get you would like be put on antipsychotics that have like terrible side effects, you know?
Yeah. And even then only after a doctor has confirmed that anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah. And like, I know I have, students, colleagues who self-diagnosed, but like it's clear, like you can have someone who, they don't have a formal diagnosis, but when there's sort of a loud sound, you see them be like, ah, can't process, and then they're sort of decreased functionality for a while, and you're like, ah, yeah, that's not just happening for no reason.
As well as relating to, like, the queer side of this conversation is, like, certain diagnoses can make it harder for you to access, like, gender-affirming hormones and gender-affirming surgeries and stuff. So, like, that's a very valid reason as well to not want a diagnosis when it could stop you from accessing healthcare, or it could, you know, the diagnostic overshadowing of, like, you know, when you have a diagnosis of something and then suddenly every single, thing that is wrong with you, doctors prescribed it being related to that. Like, it happens a lot with anxiety, of, like, people who diagnose with anxiety. And then, you know, you have, abdominal pain, and then they're like, oh, it's just your anxiety, when it's actually like, I don't know, like gallstones or something.
And I mean, sometimes it can even extend beyond the medical field, because I know, and I'm sure, well, my parents will never listen to this, but even if they did, what I'm about to say is true anyway. When I first came out as trans, parents went off, did their own research, and the response they came back with was, oh no, you're autistic, not trans. See, look at this article about this person who thought they were trans, but they were autistic. And I'm like, no, it's both. That's why I like the statistic of, autistic people more likely to be trans. Because then it's like, oh no, I'm autistic, so it's more probable.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
One very funny thing that happens to me now, looking at it is funny, but looking back it was deeply upsetting, was for some reason I had told someone I was kind of close to on the internet about my psychosis. And then when they found out, because they knew me as trans, and then when I told them about my psychosis, they like claimed that my gender was a delusion, which I think is a very funny thing to say right now, but at the time it was like deeply, deeply upsetting, and just not like not at all an understanding of how delusions work. And yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because I feel like it is a good crossover of our subjects.
And it's sort of that infantilization of the different.
Yeah, and like blaming things that I find a lot of power from on something that they perceived as being wrong with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, and I mean, with neurodiversity, that happens a fair bit where... Because, like, you have pride with the rainbow community, and it's like, no, be proud of yourself, because literally the only reason you shouldn't be proud of yourself is society has said otherwise. And then sometimes with neurodiversity, it can sometimes be a little bit harder to be proud, because it's sort of like, oh, like sometimes I'll say a thing and it might really hurt someone, and I'll be like, oh no, I didn't mean to sort of say it that way. I was trying to be helpful. But I try more to be proud, and it's very, very easy when I'm like banging out lots of work because of hyper focus, but yeah, sometimes it can be harder. But at the end of the day, being different is a good thing. There's a Star Trek, the eternal nerd that I am, the Vulcans have an ideology which is it's referred to as the Idic, which IDIC stands for infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And it's the idea that if you have a more diverse population, they can come up like all those different ways of being and ways of thinking and ways of identifying and all those kinds of things will come up with different ideas. And so if you have even more of them, when you start to combine them, you can get even greater variation.
Yeah. It's really interesting you say that, because there's an organization called the Diversity Agenda who are trying to encourage more diversity in engineering and architecture and construction, possibly, I don't know, but like their main focus for the last couple of years has been let's increase the number of, or let's get more women in engineering and let's get more women in architecture, and they've recently started branching out into more other diversities and like talking about them and educating and starting to realize that is an asset too. And so it's just been really cool to start to see that shift, and where the workplaces are embracing it already, who knows, but it's they're starting, and it's cool to see.
Well, once we replace them all with cool, neurodiverse and rainbow people, then there won't be anyone to say no, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, that just makes me think of another thing. So like, in terms of diverse sexuality, if you extrapolate, now this is me very heavily extrapolating on a field that I'm not necessarily an expert on, but I do that quite a bit. But if you extrapolate, like, the reason why penguins become gay, that's often a population thing. Like, the higher the population is, the more likely they are to, there's going to be a high proportion of gay penguins. So it's sort of almost population control. So in humans, if we keep growing, we're just going to get more gay. And then when it comes to the neurodiversity, if you actually look at the way that society operates, we're moving more and more into being a society of people who specialize, with far fewer generalists, which a lot of, like, that's really good for neurodiverse people because we tend to specialize in certain areas, whereas the neurotypical brain tends to be more of the sort of average jack of all trades kind of thing. And like back in medieval times, that was quite useful because you'd probably have to do a few different things. You'd have to know how to garden out the back and all that, and also be a baker and whatnot.
Sew your own clothes.
Yep. Fix your house. Things like that. Whereas nowadays, there's pretty much a job, a quite specific job for everything, especially in sort of more developed countries. And so, yeah, it's quite interesting that when you think about how society is developing, odds are we will not only get more gay people, but also more neurodiverse people.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thanks to you both for coming to have a little chat with me. I've really enjoyed this. I'm so excited to have Speak Out coming back, and I think we're starting off with a banger of an episode. So stay tuned for the rest of this episode, if you're a listener, to hear some content that has been written to us by other Inside Out volunteers, and we are going to read it out for them so they can still be featured. So the rest of the episode will be that. And then quickly, the current plan for the next two episodes, no pressure to our people who are putting it together, but if you are listening to this in the future, then you can fact check my words. But the next two episodes are going to be based around tertiary studies and queerness. So keep an eye out for if that's something you're interested in. So thanks everyone for listening, and thanks to my fellow co-hosts for being involved. We will sign off here and let the written content take the pride of place. An anonymous volunteer says, "I feel like my neurodivergence makes it hard for me to commit to a sexuality. Like, am I really asexual, or am I just this way because of my autism? As if having a possible reason for my lack of sexual attraction makes me not allowed to identify as ace. To the negative part of my brain, it feels like just another thing that makes me different. I'm already the autistic sibling, the mentally ill one. Do I really need to also be the queer one? Would love to know if anyone relates."
Ray says, "I find the overlap between neurodivergence and queerness in my own experience rather interesting. The way it affects my experience and understanding of different sorts of attraction. I sometimes find it hard to differentiate between different types of attraction. They kind of overlap for me. It can be hard to define them and put them into boxes. It's hard to tell what exactly I'm always feeling. These types of feelings are often categorized and then put into boxes, but that isn't how feelings always work. There is often a lot of overlap and grey area. It similarly goes for my understanding of gender. There are boxes of male and female, but what does that mean? How does that feel exactly? I don't feel connected to either of those, just more some liminal blob floating in through space. Something changing and undefined. I used to worry about these things a lot, trying to find exactly where I fit, but now I'm comfortable just drifting."
Spoil says, "Growing up, I wasn't diagnosed with any sort of neurodivergence, so I got bullied a lot at school. I also grew up in a religious household where being any letter of the LGBT plus was heavily frowned upon."
From Drag, "Coming from a closely knit, very well reserved town within the Waikato region before I moved to Auckland, being one of the only openly LGBTQ plus young people within my community was challenging to say the least. Furthermore, being neurodivergent made me feel even more isolated within my community. Music and my own artwork were my escapes in those darker, more lonely times, and even throughout the pandemic as I made the move to Auckland from that town. I began living in Auckland during the pandemic with no friends to turn to as I decided to cut off the homophobic people from my old community. It was challenging, but thanks to the vibrant LGBT plus community within my area now, I finally got to experience the kindness and acceptance the majority of our community have to offer. Furthermore, share my love for music and art with my new friends, some of which are neurodivergent just like me. Now I am happier than ever. My word of wisdom for a neurodivergent queer person out there, just like me, is that you are never alone, as it feels sometimes. Don't hide who you are for those who don't accept you for you. The right community, the right crowd will accept you for who you are. All good things take time, and it's okay to have some trial and error when finding those people or that person. Be comfortable in your queerness and who you are, and express yourself.
Kay says, I could say a lot about queerness and neurodiversity. In the future, I hope to speak about it more. For this, I'll focus on two key aspects. One, masking. I've masked many things in my life, including autism, ADHD, transness, and queerness. I have, consciously and not, taken steps to hide these aspects of myself. The way I move through the world is a complex balance of expressing myself and protecting myself. I started this when I was young. Only as I've gotten older have I been able to break down the barriers and understand my true self rather than the self, the mask, I created for society. I'm expecting this to be a lifelong journey. Two, each journey's timeline has looked very similar for me. For my queerness, I questioned, I explored identities, I felt shame and denial, I sought support, I came out. A few years later, I feel comfortable freely talking about my experiences as a queer, non-binary trans man. For my neurodivergence, I questioned, I explored types of neurodivergence, I felt shame and denial, and then I repressed it for years. When it surfaced again, the feelings were the same I'd felt for my trans, queer journey years earlier. The heart-racing anxiety when anything about it is discussed. The fear of being discovered, the separation from those I love. I hope that these timelines remain similar, as it gives me hope that one day I will be loud and proud about my neurodivergence.